From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State via the Michigan Talk Network, all over the world via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. In our 15th year, man, oh man, can you believe it? I didn't think we were going to last 15 minutes with this show, but we're very happy to have you here. Thanks to all of our affiliates for carrying this across the Great Lakes State. And the podcast is up 24/7 at wildmichiganradio.com. And I'm going to tease that we had a little bit of a conversation with a new affiliate on the east side of the state last week. And I don't want to give any more information than that. I don't want to jinx it. I just want to get going. But I'm looking forward to speaking with a lot of really cool, like-minded folks in that side of the state. So we'll be talking more about that as we learn more. I want to thank our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason, Michigan. If you need ammunition, especially handgun information, ammunition, go see them or online at notjustguns.com. While some places are limiting you to like one box, they got a 10 box limit on some of their ammunition over there, plus their new shooting facility. So make sure to go online, notjustguns.com. Thanks to our friends at Conquest Sense, also United Deer Farmers of Michigan, putting us on the air again in 2021. A lot of indoor, a lot of people being, ordered to stay indoors or stay separate, whatever. But when it comes to the outdoors, we don't have that limitation for the most part. This is a pretty big deal because we can go out, we can enjoy, we don't have the limitations of confinement or, people size limits, capacity limits, things of that nature. That's why we get outdoors, is to get away from all that. And you have to enjoy the outdoors is what we're always looking for. And that's how I found Jason Vanderwall. I found him on a site called Magnet Fishing Michigan on a Facebook page. And I figured, it's got the word fishing in there. It's got the word Michigan. Why not? And joining us right now is Jason Vanderwall. How are you, sir?
Doing great. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Let's give your original hometown a shout out because I know we have friends that listen in that area.
Yeah, I'm originally from Hoxieville, about 20 miles west of Cadillac.
Okay, so now that we put them on the digital map with our show, you are living where currently now?
Currently, I'm living in Livonia.
Okay, so that's still a nice area, but not the rural setting of Hoxieville.
Oh, no, it's a big change. Growing up out in the middle of nowhere to being able to see six neighbors' houses at once.
Yeah, I get that, but... But you found a way to stay entertained in that area, and when we get into it a little bit more, I'll tell you why this interested me probably more than the average person is. You do something called magnet fishing. Now, I've seen this, and, we're not going to make jokes about what are you fishing for magnets or something, but you're fishing with them, and these are magnets that have... how do you rate a magnet, first of all? I guess that's my question because I'm not a big science guy.
They're lifted by, rated by lifting capacity, in a perfect setting, however many pounds they could lift is what they're rated at.
So that's pretty set forward then. So now here comes the fishing part. Now you guys are using like a rope, a nylon rope, something not too probably thick and heavy, but enough to... hopefully drag in what you got.
Some of my smaller ropes are rated for about 2,600 pounds. Use a lot of climbing rope.
Oh, okay. So lower diameter, but a higher tensile strength.
Right around 10 millimeter is a good place to start. My latest rope is 16 millimeter, and it's quite large, but it's a lot easier on the hands.
Yeah, I was going to say, because some of the places that you are fishing with these magnets, looking for metal objects, things that will stick to the magnet, are probably notorious for some pretty big pieces.
Oh, I've gotten onto a couple of large safes. The last one I got onto was actually a gun safe, probably about 4.5 feet tall. I'm guessing weighed near 600-700 pounds. We couldn't get it out of the water, but we got it up close enough to the top of the water where we can see it. gotten manhole covers, car parts, all kinds of stuff.
Okay. Look, growing up in Lansing, I mean, I've seen a lot of things in the river, a lot of things that really shouldn't have been in the river, more than just material, if you know what I mean. But I mean, this has got to be, it's a crapshoot, literally, every time you go out and you're throwing that magnet, dragging it through the water.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. You never know what you're gonna get on there.
Now, some of the interesting, I mean, a safe that big, I don't know, dude. I can't fathom why somebody would want to throw a great big safe. I mean, go to that kind of trouble to throw that kind of safe into the river.
It was stolen. It was broken open. We got a few other safes out of the same area. We pulled out a few guns. One of them still had a trigger lock on it, so I believe those were actually inside of that gun safe when it went in.
Okay, well, I guess I'm still miffed by this whole thing, because that would take a lot of effort on a thief's part, and they're really, you know, not ambitious, I guess I would say.
It was a part of the river where they could have backed a pickup truck right up to the water's edge and dropped it in, and the water there is, you know, 16 feet deep.
Now, do you do the majority of your fishing from shore, or are you doing it off bridges and things like that?
From bridges or offshore, both of them. I prefer off bridges or higher spots. It's a little easier to get farther out.
Okay, Jason Vanderwall is joining us here. We're talking about magnet fishing here in Michigan. And I find that interesting too. From a bridge, it stands to reason that things of like a bigger weight might be a little bit more difficult to retrieve.
When you're on a bridge, usually if you get onto something big or too big to pull straight up, you can walk it off to the side of the bridge and pull it up onto the embankment.
Do you have many problems with obstructions in the water? Because, I mean, there's usually a lot of structure around bridges, maybe concrete and things of that nature.
Broken concrete is probably the worst the worst enemy, because the magnet will get stuck in between it. But I carry a 4-ton come along in order to pull it out when it happens.
Dude, this is serious business for you. Don't get me wrong. This is not one of those laugh at, it's a laugh with moment, because, you know, I'm thinking if I'm doing this, I'm going down the river where I can probably wade, and more than likely I'm going to end up stuck on some concrete. I'm going to get mad and end up cutting the rope, which is not exactly what we want to do, because there is an environmental element to what you're doing.
Correct. Luckily, the magnets we use are usually any kind of casing is stainless steel, so it's not going to rust. It's not going to cause issues like that. The primary focus is to clean the waterways. You know, we've cleaned a lot of areas where people kayak and swim and pulled out massive amounts of sharp metal that could have potentially hurt someone. We take out a lot of things that can hurt the fish. I've pulled in miles and miles and miles of old fishing line, thousands of lures. It's Detroit River's a pretty disgusting place at the bottom.
Well, you know, we've got a buddy by the name of Lance Valentine from Teaching Fish, and he's a guide, an instructional guide on Detroit River and Saginaw Bay and places like that. And he tells us in the Trenton Channel that you might as well just take a tackle box and throw it off the edge of the boat, because that's about how it's going to go if you start to fish over there.
I'd believe it. From what I pulled up, I would absolutely believe that.
Now, when it comes to the lures, what are the conditions? Because I can guarantee there's a lot of guys out there right now going, you know, if I get a hold of this guy, maybe I can get a discount or something. It's not like golf balls, you know, where you can buy them by the dozen in an egg carton at a yard sale. But you know, I'm wondering, seriously, though, what are the conditions of these things?
The sinkers, I pull in a lot of 1, 2, and 3 ounce sinkers they use for catfishing. Those are always in fine shape. But the majority of the crankbaits and the spoons, you know, they just need new hooks. Sometimes the paint's worn off them. But for the most part, I'd have to say that 50% of them are reusable.
That's not bad at all. I mean, really, that's not a bad number percentage-wise.
Oh, no, I'll never have to buy fishing tackle again in my life.
Jason Vanderwall is joining us here. We're going to talk more about magnet fishing in Michigan right here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, Back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan. Cross the line at an altitude time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. So happy to have you here, and thanks to our friends again at Conquest Sense, makers of the fine Evercalm and VS1 Deer Sense in a stick, plus some other great products and tools. They have the Scrape Maker and some other great stuff. And you can follow Doug Roberts, the Deer Professor, on their Facebook page or online at conquestsense.com. There's a link on our website, which is wildmichiganradio.com. And we will put a link on our Facebook page, because we're speaking with Jason Vanderwall talking about Magnet Fishing Michigan here. And Jason, you've got a page and you've got a YouTube channel for this as well, because I can talk about this stuff all day, but it's the visual that's so cool about what you do.
Yeah. We're the Motor City Magnet Fishers. My daughter and I, my 8-year-old daughter and I, started a YouTube channel last August. No, I'm sorry, it was June. And we've just been having a lot of fun with it since. We had a lot of videos up, a lot of people that really enjoy our content.
Now, what do you do? What do you do outside of this? I mean, you have a real gig like I do, and everybody else.
I work at a repair facility. I manage a towing company, repair facility, gas station. We pretty much do anything automotive related.
Nice. So, and I'll tell you another reason why this caught my attention is the other business I do is, technically, for a more understandable term, because of American Pickers, I do the same thing. I buy and sell and have bought and sold vintage and antique items probably my whole life, and the picking life is wonderful. And I happened to meet a guy up in the UP that I was buying some old snowmobile helmets from. The typical question, you know, what else you got? Well, he says, you know, I work on a dredging boat, and we were at River Rouge, and I pulled this out, which happened to be a 1920s porcelain mobile oil and gasoline sign.
Oh, wow.
And luckily for me, there was a section of it missing. I didn't care. It's porcelain. It had all the great graphics on it, and I got a hell of a deal on it, but that was on a dredging boat. I'm like, oh, my God, the stuff you can find. And then I see this with magnet fishing. I'm like, okay, there's something that I can talk and get excited about, even though it's not like actual fishing. You're still fishing, as the term would imply. And there have been times that I've seen on some of those videos that guys have pulled up an old bumper with a catfish living in it.
The only fish I have caught was actually attached to a line through my magnet in, pulled in a brand new fishing pole on one end, and pulled in a smallmouth bass on the other end. Caught a lot of crayfish and stuff like that, but that bass was the only fish I've actually gotten while doing this.
It's still cool, in my opinion.
Oh, it was great. It was still alive. I was able to put it back, set it free. I mean, it wasn't a big one, but it made our day being able to take it off from the hook and let it go free.
You know, and having your daughter involved, as we encourage people to get kids involved in the outdoors, is just another aspect of getting them out of the house and kind of, you know, educating them as to what is in the river or the body of water that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty cool way of doing things. Now, what is the equipment where do you get this equipment? You know, if we're looking for it, do you have a specific source that you go to?
I use Rogue Magnetics. We're actually affiliated with them. They're a company that makes magnets. The current magnet that I use from them has a 1,200-pound capacity lifting weight. Most everything else, you know, my come along I bought from Home Depot. The ropes, you can buy those off Amazon. I get them from Rogue also. But really, to get started, a magnet, a rope, and a bucket, and a good pair of gloves is about all you need.
You know, again, it seems pretty cost-effective, too, from what I've seen from, you know, some of the stuff on the website where you buy your products, that you can buy varying degrees of equipment with gloves, rope, magnet, and it seems pretty cost-effective for what you're doing.
Yeah, you can really get into it for under $100 for a really, really good setup, or, you know, around $25, $30 for just a good entry-level setup or a child setup.
Now, let me ask a question. Speaking with Jason Vanderwall here, speaking about fishing with magnets, as we've been saying. What about some of the handguns or the rifles, things of that nature? I mean, I know it's exciting. I know the condition's probably not great on these things, but is this something you guys are turning to the police for possible evidence?
Oh, absolutely. If it last thing I want to do is get caught with an unregistered firearm or a firearm that was reported stolen or possibly used in a crime. Out of the three I've gotten out of the Detroit River, the only one that I would have to say wasn't still functional was a 20-gauge shotgun. Got a Ruger Red Hawk 44 Magnum that just had some minor surface gunk on it, I should say. It would have been easily cleaned off. It was a stainless frame. And then got a Smith & Wesson 22 target pistol, which would have taken minimal cleaning to make it functional again.
Still cool, though. I mean, it's still the initial find, like what I do outside of here, is always probably the most exciting thing.
Oh, it's extremely exciting. When you look down and you see that coming up on the magnet, it makes you stop for a second and reevaluate what you're about to do.
It's cool. Now, you have a YouTube channel with your adventures on there as well that people can watch?
Yes, sir.
What is that link, and so we can send that off to people?
It's the just go to YouTube and search for Motor City Magnet Fishers.
Pretty simple. Now, how has the winter treated you? I mean, because you know, there's a lot of frozen, which I can't see being like great for magnet fishing. But you know, maybe some of the rivers that have been still open.
Well, it slowed us down. Detroit River, actually, all the smaller rivers, the Rouge, everything froze up solid a few weeks ago. The Detroit River had bad ice flows. I mean, sheets of ice the size of football fields coming down. I use a camera on my rope to see what's at the bottom of the river, and I ended up losing that because it hit one of those sheets of ice and snapped off. But we'll be getting a new GoPro because a lot of people like that underwater footage.
Well, yeah, that's crazy what's under there. I mean, Lord knows I fish the Detroit River every spring, and I enjoy the walleye run through there. Again, you know, I will lose a one-ounce sinker once in a great while on there. And, Lord, maybe you're the guy that finds it. Who knows? But it's cool that there's, like, so many facets to what you're doing. The adventure, the cleanup, and the end result.
Oh, and the workout. It's a big workout. You get a lot of big heavy items, and you have to transport those and make sure that it's disposed of properly. You know, we see some people that are into this activity and they just leave everything sitting where they pulled it out, and that's very counterproductive to what we're attempting to do.
I'll just plain out say it. That's pretty half-ass.
yeah, they're into it for the treasure hunting aspect only. If it's not cool, they're not taking it with them. And we end up cleaning up after a lot of other people that like to go out magnet fishing.
Yeah, well, you know, I would suggest that, you know, just complete the task. It's not that big of a deal, in my opinion. You know, and there's scrappers out there, too, that would probably like to, you know, have some of the stuff that you guys are coming across because it's metal and there's still a decent price on it right now.
Yeah, I think last time I checked scrap, it was at about 2 cents a pound. But, no, we contact scrappers throughout the areas to come and get what we can actually haul. I have a battery-powered sawzall in order to cut stuff down to fit it into the car. Looking to get a pickup truck and a trailer soon because we do end up with a lot more stuff than what I can put in the back of my Charger.
Yeah, believe me. I know when I had that sign, we've got an Impala. And I'm like, okay, how am I going to get this in there? And it fit. It barely fit, but I wasn't going home without it. My wife would have had a long walk. But yeah. Jason Vanderwall, thank you so much. Make sure you check out the YouTube channel and check for him on the Facebook as well. We will have a link to that on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Jason, thank you.
Thank you very much.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Thanks to Jason Vanderwall. Talking about magnet fishing in the Great Lakes State. Man, the stuff you can find. But yeah, like he says, if you're out magnet fishing and you come across guns, it's exciting, yes, but at the same time, you probably should turn them in. Just a thought. But there's other stuff. Fishing lures? Wow, what a great way to get discount fishing lures. Speaking of fishing, please, start avoiding the ice at all costs. We had one angler go through and perish this week over in the Sunfield area. Ice, you know, is spotty in some places, and with this constant sunshine, oddly enough, that we have had, it's really caused some issues on the water, on the hard water. So please use caution out there. No fish is worth your life and the grief and pain that you can leave behind for families and friends. Just a thought from your friends here at Wild Michigan. Going to talk to my good friend, Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer, out doing some shed hunting up north along with his lovely wife, Beth. But we're breaking away to talk a little bit about getting outdoors and getting that spring fever itch and getting the bow tuned up. Mr. Nelson, how are you, sir?
Grant, I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, any day outdoors shed hunting is a good day.
You know, I couldn't agree more. And my wife and I, perhaps Beth more so than myself, we're shed hunting fanatics. I mean, we get after really hard. This, not unlike a lot of people in their mushroom hunting, we spend a lot of time in the woods and swamps and fields looking for sheds every spring.
You know, I've never really, in all the years, I think I may have come across as many sheds as I've had morels, which is like one. So,
well, you know, that's so true too, Duran. I remember because I'm a poor mushroom hunter, you know, and I have friends of mine that'll come over to our place and they'll, oh, here's some, you know, and I'm like, how in the heck did you find those, you know? But shed hunting really isn't a whole lot different. I mean, people, it's kind of funny that you even bring this up because yesterday I was telling a good friend of mine, avid bow hunter, that Beth and I were going to spend the day today trying to find some sheds. And he said, you know, I have, you know, went shed hunting numerous times. And he said, I've never found one, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's knowing where to look, spending a lot of time, and having an eye to spot them. I mean, it's like mushroom hunting where you look, you know, you go down a runway and you're looking, you don't see it. You look back with the way you just came. Oh, there's a point sticking out over there, and grab it. And then same goes for areas where to find them. Fence crossings, pinch points, any good place that you would hang a tree stand often is a great place to find sheds.
You know, it's funny. My wife and I were going for a drive on, what was it, Wednesday night? I think it was. Yeah, it was Wednesday night. And, you know, we're outside the edge of a fence line. And I looked over, and there's one buck, a young one, that still had antlers. They were, like, really white-looking. But I'm like, wait, we're in March. Why are they still there?
You know, and I've seen them, Duran, at Easter time still with antlers. And they're usually, generally, 90% of the time, they're juvenile, you know, year-and-a-half-old bucks, you know, carry them longer than big mature bucks tend to lose them oftentimes a little earlier. But lots of factors. I mean, the more stressful the winter, the quicker they shed them. Mm-hmm. The milder the winter, the longer they hang on to them. You know, it's all stress-related and how long the rut continues. There's several factors involved in it. But, yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. I mean, you'll see a nice buck that has dropped its antlers at Christmas. And then others, like you said, they go into March with them.
That's you know, it really surprised me. But we really haven't had that hard winter. We had the difficult latter part, but and then even then that didn't last that long.
No, overall, I mean, you look at December, very mild. January, for the most part, I would rate it mild. You know, not much snow, some decent days. It wasn't till around the 5th or 6th of February here in Michigan that we started, getting a little bit of Mother Nature's wrath with snow and bitter cold temperatures. But as you mentioned, it really didn't last. And March is the most critical month. This month right here, Durant, this is what makes or breaks your deer herd. I mean, more deer die in March than any other month because they're in bad shape, you know, and if we have a good break like we've had, 50-degree days, sun, that's what really helps them get into springtime in good shape and survive Michigan's winters.
Speaking with Tom Nelson, the American Archer, and Tom, you know, since we're on this shed hunting thing, I mean, might as well stay on it. Now, the coloration is going to be a bit lighter, I'm assuming, and, you know, and with that kind of a maybe depending on the floor that you have out in the woods, whether it's a bunch of oak leaves and you know, rotting maples, things of that nature, it might look like an early mushroom or something coming up if you really look at it.
Yes, or a stick, branch. I mean, it's funny. I wish I could tell you. And, again, Beth my wife will back me up here. How many times? Oh, and you know, get excited. Only the reach over or take a step forward. Oh, it's a branch. It's a stick. It's a bone. But you know, when you see them, most of the time, you know what they are right away. I mean, if you're especially in a field, you know, where the in the sun, if the sun is shining, it's a great day to shed hunt because they really stand out. I mean, they're easy to see and such. And the minute the snow's gone, that's why we're out there now. We'll be out a lot for the next couple of weeks. This is when you want to find them. The squirrels and porcupines haven't chewed on them yet, and they really do stand out with no grass growing or anything yet.
No, you know, and you bring that up, too, about squirrels and porcupines chewing on them for the minerals in there. And, of course, we're just now catching on as to what great chew toys they are for dogs.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, and speaking of dogs, Grant, you know, it's becoming more and more popular to train your dog to fetch and find shed antlers. I have two different friends of mine that have shed hunting dogs. Both of them are labs, and they just let the dogs do all the work.
Yeah, far preferred in my world.
Yeah, oh, no, it's great fun. The dog loves it, great exercise, and a super way to find sheds that maybe are covered up by, you know, in a grass field or something that otherwise you'd walk right past.
Kind of rewarding, too, speaking with Tom Nelson here at the American Archer, rewarding in the aspect that, you know, your trail cam has been kind of your guide as to what's out there, what you're not seeing. And it's also when you shed hunt, the proof that, oh, man, this one might have made it through the year, especially something that you've been following year after year.
Oh, exactly. You know, and when you find that shed, and especially if you're fortunate enough to find a matching set of them, which is really gets us excited. But, you know, you look at it and you go, oh, boy, he's going to be a dandy this year. Or you, in the same breath, you might say, where in the heck was he last fall? I never saw this buck. Where'd he come from? You know, true survivor.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, and again, now, you know, I'm kind of like, well, maybe I should go out this afternoon. It's nice out and, you know, and do some shed hunting out to my dad's place out in Langsburg. But, you know, not a lot of property, but there are a lot of deer that go through that area, you know, right next to the state park there. So, you know, it's a prime place to do that. And you know, maybe I will get out and do that today. But in a little bit, we're going to talk about getting out and getting tuned up for turkey season with the bow. And then come May, some bow fishing, something I've never done. I want to do it really bad. And this year, I think we're going to look into it a little bit heavier. But Tom Nelson, if you don't mind hanging on, you and Beth for a couple of minutes, we appreciate you joining us here. And we'll catch up with you in a second. Going to talk about getting out and getting limbered up for that the upcoming turkey season to bow hunt. So, Tom, hang on if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
And we will get you ready, man. We got a lot of things coming up as we get into spring here. Of course, we're going to get into the steelhead runs. We're going to talk some early salmon fishing. Well, once we get the ice out on the big water, so there's so many things coming our way to talk about here on the show. And if you have a suggestion, something that you would like to have covered, or someone you know that you may feel to be a good guest for the show, by all means, hit me up on our email, outdoormailbag@gmail.com. You hear that in the promos with Chris Tyler. By all means, get a hold of us and hit us up on the website as well, wildmichiganradio.com. You can find our guests like Not Just Guns, Conquest Sense, United Deer Farmers of Michigan, all there to help bring you what we love so much. It's Outdoor Talk Radio here on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hi, this is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails, and it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale. The good Lord only knows all the stories it can tell. Granddaddy's gone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. Thanks to our friends here at the Michigan Talk Network for keeping us on and going in our 15th year of Wild Michigan. And we're being brought to you by the United Deer Farmers of Michigan, a great group of people, very like-minded, wanting a good, healthy deer herd. And, of course, they raise some pretty big deer on their own, but also concerned about the CWD here in Michigan. Lots of work being put into that with their own money. But our good friend Tom Nelson joining us right now, a host of the American Archer for many, many years on the Outdoor Channel. And, Tom, we are coming up into spring turkey season here in April, which is my, out of all the things, I mean, aside from bear hunting, turkey is by far my favorite Michigan thing to hunt. And I've yet to do it with a bow. And I think, you know, where I hunt this year and knowing the area better, it might be a little bit easier to do that. But still, something on the bucket list.
You know, and I'm glad to hear you say that, Duran, because, you know, one thing about hunting them with a bow and arrow, of course, the added challenge, you know, first off, got to have them close and get that perfect shot and all that. But it just, to me, it just adds to the season. It makes it last longer. And please don't, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging or anything, but in the early days of Michigan's turkey hunting, we're looking back 25 years ago, more than that, 35 years ago, et cetera. I hunted with a gun, and, you know, just getting a turkey was quite a feat. And then it got to the point where within a couple of days of season opening, I would tag out. And I thought, man, I love being out there, love working the birds, you know, because that's what it's all about, calling them in. I'm going to just try to shoot one with my bow. And the following year I did, and ever since I've just, you know, went out and hunted with a bow and restricted myself to it. And you know, with a little extra work with the decoys, the blind, you almost have to have a blind. But I really enjoy it. And my wife, she's an avid turkey hunter. She likes it more than I do. But I'm glad to hear you say that. And it's so rewarding. I can't say enough about it. Getting one up close and personal and shooting it with a bow, that's a huge coup.
It is. And look, anything, if you've ever bow hunted, anything that you take with a bow, to me, has been super, super rewarding. Gun hunting has been good. I've never taken a deer with a gun, ever. I wanted to hunt, when I got my Michigan tag for elk, I wanted to hunt with a bow, but the landowner said, you know, I prefer you didn't. I just want to make sure that the animal goes down. Well, that's all well and good. I was able to take a Michigan elk with my buddy's rifle. It wasn't even my rifle. But bear has always been with a bow. So, you know, I've got a couple of things I want to accomplish, and turkey is definitely one of them.
Yep. Well, again, just you know, take a little less time. I know for a fact you've got some good turkey hunting spots just from past stories. So, you know, get a blind. A blind is as important as your bow. I mean, if you get in a good pop-up blind, you're invisible. And turkeys, unlike deer, you can pop one up that morning and an hour later shoot a bird out of it. They're not like a whitetail that shy away from it until it's been out there for a while. Turkeys, you can run and gun. You can put up the blind one spot one day, move it to the next. But that way you can easily draw your bow. The turkey's focused on your decoys, and you can get them. I mean, I've had gobblers a yard from my blind. I mean, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They just are oblivious to it. They're so focused on the decoys.
No, that's a beautiful thing because, look, we've done the same thing. We've been, like, feet away from Big Tom's with my wife and I hunting. And they are. They're very focused on what the decoy is and the calls that you've been doing. But movement distract them in that time of when they're strutting, when they're focused on the decoy?
Oh, it can, absolutely. But, again, inside that blind, they just aren't going to see you, and they don't, and they're oblivious to it. But, you know, if you were just hunting them like you were with a gun and you're posted up underneath a tree or something, boy, and that's how I used to do it. I used to just try to put a tree between me and the bird when they'd come in, and I did get it done, but it was way, way, way more difficult, and I had many more screw-ups and misadventures. So the blind has changed everything about turkey hunting with a bow. So, as I said, a blind, super important. I put that decoy right out in front, 5 yards in front of the blind. That way, if they hang up, they're still within bow range, but they generally, you know, come right in. And as far as turkeys go, in my opinion, you almost can't have them close enough.
Right. I mean, and look, what people don't realize, too, Tom, is, you know, and I know you do, is their wings and feathers can be like armor in some cases.
Oh, Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, I've heard people say, you know, I'll put a washer or use a dull broadhead so I don't shoot through them. Well, you use the same thing you would hunt deer with. I mean, a razor-sharp broadhead, you know, pay attention, really concentrate on where you hit them. And you know, I personally, from, again, 30-plus years of turkey hunting with a bow, I generally try to shoot them facing me and aim for the beard. I've shot them, you know, broadside, going up from the leg, but probably the most lethal shot I've taken on a bird has been facing right at me, right in the beard. I've had some friends that have shot them when they're at full strut from behind and claim the results are phenomenal, and they're avid turkey hunters, so I believe them. A lot of guys and gals try to shoot them in the head. That can be a little tough because of the fact, you know, there, a lot of times that bird's head is moving around and such. Mm-hmm. You sure as heck don't want to wound them. So I just concentrate on a good body shot. But just remember, that kill area on the body of a turkey is about the size of your fist. So you've got a very small kill area. So really think about it and pick a spot when you shoot one with a bow.
Tom Nelson, our guest here on Wild Michigan. Tom, is there a preference between mechanical and a standard solid broadhead?
Well, you want to start a debate. There you go.
I knew it was coming.
I knew, you know, being in turkey camp, I'm going to be in Nebraska here in a few weeks turkey hunting when they open up, but there'll be guys shooting mechanicals, fixed blades, and everybody will lay claim to what's best. But I will say this, if I were going to throw my 2 cents worth in, a big cut is, I mean, the bigger the broadhead, the better, as long as you can make it fly out of your bow. You know, that's number one, making sure you have an accurate arrow with the broadhead on the end of it. But the bigger broadhead you can get for turkey, all the better.
Yeah, I'm not, I'm not affiliated with any broadhead specifically, but personally, I've always liked the Grim Reaper mechanical because of that solid point it's got. And you know, was an inch and a half opening, even an inch and three quarter opening on some of their broadheads. It's just, it's great. But there's a lot of guys out there like fixed blades. I'm not going to get into which one's better. Okay, you can do what you dig.
No, yeah. But you know, just one thing to remember. You know, a big plus for expandable is the fact that it shoots like a field point. I shoot Vortex broadheads, kill turkeys with them, deer, elk. They work good, cut a big hole. Super accurate, and again, I just say that about a mechanical, that they are extremely accurate, and that's so important. So if you're having trouble with your fixed blades, try a mechanical. But you know, accuracy is the key to success, and you owe it to the animal that you're hunting to have an accurate flying arrow, and you know, and the broadhead is steering that. So you want to make sure you practice with what you're going to hunt with.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is, too, if you're new to hunting a blind, make sure you have clearance for that arrow, because looking through that sight will throw you off a little bit.
So I'm going to eat some humble pie here and tell you, I've used pop-up blinds now religiously for years. And not 2 years ago, I had a witness that was in the blind videoing me that I shot this turkey and he flopped around, and I went out and dispatched him and got back in, and the guy was kind of chuckling, and I said, "What?" And he said, I'm just amazed that you killed that bird. And I said, "Why?" He said, "Look," he pointed to at the window of the blind, and about an inch below the bottom of the window is a nice broadhead cut going through it.
Oh boy.
Where I shot right through the cloth material, but it didn't, because the broad was razor sharp, it didn't affect the flight of the arrow.
That's amazing.
That was, to say it was a little embarrassing, yeah, it was.
And you got it, though, so there.
That's the bottom line. Thank you, Duran, yes.
There it is. Tom Nelson, the American Archer, thank you so much for your insight and your honesty, brother. We appreciate that.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Duran.
Absolutely. Thanks again to everybody joining us here. Jason Vanderwall in the first hour of the show. Whole nother hour coming your way. Make sure to hit us up on the website, wildmichiganradio.com, on Facebook. And thanks to our friends at Not Just Guns, Conquest Sense, and United Deer Farmers of Michigan.